Satan Friday on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish. We are going to have legitimate celebrity in the studio today. It, not like this person, I don't know if we should say their name, we should tease it, is a legitimate superstar celebrity that has been on the big screen.
A heartthrob, too.
A heartthrob. Buddy, I should have put those eye masks on that you did yesterday.
I got a haircut.
You did get a haircut for today's celebrity guest.
Uncoincidentally. Didn't want to look like an absolute slob next to... Well, say it.
No.
Why not?
Well, I just kind of like to, like, suspense.
Okay. I mean, he's on in an hour and a half.
Okay.
Well. You can tease the show. It's a big guest day.
It is.
We got Josh Morrissey on later.
Right.
That's exciting.
Yeah, Josh Morrissey.
And Jets. We're going to tee that up with the Josh Norrissey.
We do have Josh Morrissey on the show, or as others are calling it, Josh Norrissey.
Yes.
Ahead of tonight's battle against Winnipeg Jets, we have in-studio guest that both of us, we look a little bit more presentable this morning.
We tried. I don't know if it's saying much, but we tried.
All right. Should we just tell everybody? I mean, if you watched Sportsnet last night, you saw a teaser of this because he's been in and amongst the
he's doing
media
the car wash.
Right now. He's doing the car wash. That's a good way to put it. The car wash. Jason Priestley.
Yes. What came to your mind when you first thought about Jason Priestley coming in here?
Well, I knew that he was from 90210, which is something I didn't really watch. It's a bit before my generation.
It's like, you know who he is, but do we have the same cultural experience? Like,
we don't.
I'm a little older than you. I didn't watch 90210. Mm-hmm. I was looking back, because we're obviously going to talk about hockey with him. When did 90210 come out? 1990, I believe.
Yeah,
so Wayne Gretzky had just gone to the LA Kings, and he's in LA shooting a show. Like, a hockey fan would be pretty excited at that time in LA. So, but... saying that, we missed Beverly Hills 90210.
Like, I was
more of an OC guy.
Yes.
You watched the OC? The OC is kind of my 90210, I think.
So I'm now an OC via Netflix person. Like,
You're currently going through it? I'm jealous.
No, when I was in university, it was one of those things that you put on, like, you know, when you're studying or whatever, like in the background,
yes,
in the dorm.
And the OC debuted 13 years after 90210.
So this guy is like... He knows, like, what it's like to be in front of the spotlight, which today I'm sure he'll feel a little nervous in this studio, bright lights, Justin and I with the headphones, but it's a big deal. It's kind of cool.
And we should say...
The reason why we have him.
We have him because his new documentary, mm-hmm, Offside, the Harold Ballard story, will debut,
yes,
Sunday, January 23rd at 8 p.m. on CBC and CBC Gem, and... we want to talk to him about it. He was talking about it last night on the broadcast. I watched the doc yesterday. Very, very good. Very informative. I thought it was really well done, so I can't wait to talk to him about it.
Jason Priestley. Take a look. Google him. You'll know.
We need to get Seth Cohen on the show next if we're doing our...
Yeah.
You know, whatever. It's teen dramas. Teen dramas? I think it's a teen drama.
Mm-hmm.
You watch in your 20s, though.
I know that one. All right. Yesterday, no Toronto sports in action, but there was a Canadian relevant storyline. We talked about it in the Wake and Rake, which almost hit once again, but our alternative Wake and Rake almost hit as well. We had some great picks in the text line. Of course, Julius Randle hit his over and rebounds. Like, it's not even a question. But we had the Utah Valley, whoever texted that in, covered, mm-hmm, the spread. Rublev covered the spread. It was Marcus Rashford that didn't score, which ruined our three-leg
alternative
parlay. The Marlies won, though.
The old alt parlay.
The Marlies won.
Yeah.
And then our actual Wake and Rake was Stamkos over 2.5 shots. Well, we'll explain why that one hit.
I think 3 goals probably get that done.
Yeah, hat trick means that you put the puck on net more than 2.5 times.
Yeah.
Stars and Sharks hit the over, but the Avs and the Flames did not. It was 3-0 in the first 10 minutes of the Avs game, and I was like, oh, it's a lock.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure I was tucked in by the time any of these games started, but I had a great feeling about last night.
Yeah, it's okay.
I had a great feeling. I thought there were 3. I was looking at them like, wow, that's a really good parlay.
Mostly
success. We're hovering around it. We're buzzing. We got something cooking. A lot of the things coming in are really, really solid, which
is
great. We
got some sharps that are listening to the show.
So I feel like, I don't know. maybe parlay
betting. Sharp gamblers.
Parlay betting's maybe should be the number one thing on your, except if you're you, on Division Super Wildcard Weekend, whatever. But the stuff that you come in, if we're getting all these single bets out there, we should be a profitable show. So just, we got to trust our audience. I think they've earned that. Mm-hmm. The Rublev picks with, you know,
Randall
Locke
every night.
I mean, we got some good stuff coming in. So we got to focus on the positive.
And tonight we've got Jets here against the Maple Leafs and Raptors on the road against Timberwolves, an hour staggered start time. So you can send in something from that. But Stamkos hitting over 2.5 shots was not only a nice win for us, but he scored his 500th career goal yesterday.
His best accomplishment hitting the over, but 3 goals in 500 for his career, pretty good as well.
He's the 8th player ever in NHL history to score a hat trick on his 500th goal night, which I thought, 8 players have done that? That's actually a lot.
Yeah,
odds of scoring a hat trick, also the game that you hit 500 goals. 8 people have done that? That was a bit surprising to me. But the biggest thing is he's the 3rd active NHL player at this point to have 500 goals. With that, it's Crosby and Ovechkin. To do that all in one night on an away game that happens to be in Canada, and we teed this up yesterday. It's like he'd been pushing for 500. He's going to do it against the Canucks. He does it. He scores 2 more. It's a really nice night for him. They obviously beat the Canucks. And I feel like we maybe it's because of the bubble that we're in. We don't talk about Steven Stamkos enough as a pillar of our current NHL lore.
Well, he doesn't get the Crosby Ovechkin shine, right? And I guess that makes sense. I don't think he's Crosby or Ovechkin. However, clearly, he might be next on that list. But when we talk about eras, when we talk about, you know, post-salary cap era and how good the game has gotten since then, it's always Crosby, Ovechkin, because they came in at that time and they really changed things for the better. Their rivalry was great. I don't know how much fabrication went into it, but they did buy into it. It seemed they didn't like each other for a little while. Washington and Pittsburgh beating the playoffs more often than not. Pittsburgh winning Stanley Cups. Washington responding with its Stanley Cup. Them being the center of attention always seemed to really, really elevate that rivalry and put them in that really high standing. But if we're talking about that next tier, Stamkos leads that tier, right? Like, in terms of active players, he's probably having the most successful career now with 500 goals, 2 Stanley Cups, 4 Stanley Cup finals appearance, 3 in a row.
Couple gold medals?
No. And that's the one thing that really...
Not in, like, juniors or... He's never won any gold medals in his life?
I'm sure he's sniffed around some world championships.
Wow. Not, obviously. He won a... World Junior Championship in 2008, and
so he's got World
Canada
Junior
Cup in 2016.
Yeah, that World Cup of Hockey. Yeah, that's the one thing that dogs him, right?
Yeah,
the one thing that really hurts him is when he was at the peak
probably
of his
never
powers.
Never going to get a chance again.
In 2010, he breaks his leg, or 2014, he breaks his leg. 2010, he was not chosen for the team when he maybe should have. He was playing at a really high level then, but maybe he was considered, you know, the last cut or you know, just on the chopping block there. It seems like he's been sort of tortured to a certain point in his career until he got back to the Stanley Cup final the second time and won it because his first Stanley Cup, of course, he comes off the bench and the bubble scores that goal, but he wasn't even a part of it, really.
Yeah.
He was one small chapter in the Lightning's rise or actual coronation. So it seems like he's been tortured for a while, but since he got over that tortured phase, it's been nothing but gravy. Like, everything he touches is great. He walks on water. He's a back-to-back Stanley Cup champion. He's one of the most successful players of his era, and now he has 500 goals. So he went from this, like, really tortured, ill-fated career to a certain extent that was, like, should have been more than it was, and now it's everything. Now there's no doubt. Now he leaves behind nothing but an impressive Hall of Fame legacy.
He's got 2 Rocket Award-winning seasons. He's obviously been an All-Star, I think, 7 times. And you kind of forget that he was born, like, he's younger than Ovi and Sidney Crosby. He's now in the 1990 range, the player with the most goals and points of any player born in the 90s. He just sneaks in the 90s.
Yeah, I was going to say, just sneaks in 1990.
Still. That's your decade, right? I don't know how you evaluate like players in like our generation. Like, I still think of Sidney Crosby being born in like 87 and Stamkos being born in 90, but I don't know, like, generational.
Well,
how
it seems
you
like there's a bigger
that.
Difference, right? It seems like there's more than a 3 and 5 year gap, I believe, Ovechkin's 1985. A 3 and 5 year gap with those guys because he seemed like he came into the league much later.
It does feel like that.
Like when those guys
like
had
that
already,
feels like a different generation at times, but it's really just a 3 to 5 year difference.
And there's pretty strong overlap. Yeah, there's a lot of overlap. And it seemed like they had already made their mark, though. Crosby won the Stanley Cup in 2009, I think. And I'm not sure if that was even Stamkos' draft year, but whatever. He was still a young guy and not really making his mark on the NHL yet when Ovechkin and Crosby had already done a lot of their establishing. But he's now closer to that category, I think, than he is the rest of the players in that like secondary tier. I mean, that would include guys like Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews. I mean, they won their Stanley Cups, but did they have the individual career that Steven Stamkos is having? I mean, maybe not quite. I think Jonathan Toews won more because he's been a part of those Olympic teams. But Patrick Kane, I mean, he's got way more goals than both of them, and he's had the same amount of team success now.
Stamkos was drafted in 08, and Crosby was already the captain of the Pittsburgh Penguins at that point.
He would have been in the Stanley Cup final in 08, right?
So it does feel like completely different in terms of where you are starting your career. Like, to be drafted the same year or the year after Crosby's the youngest captain in, like, I don't know, NHL franchise history, at least the Penguins. I got to look at that.
Well, here's the next tier. There's Crosby and Ovechkin, and then the next tier is Kane, Malkin, Kopitar, Stamkos, Bergeron, Backstrom.
Bergeron, though.
Tavares, Giroux, Toews, Corey Perry. Like, I think the only one.
Corey Perry.
I think the only one that can kind of compete with Stamkos in terms of success and career is Patrice Bergeron underneath the Ovechkin Crosby duo.
Right. Those two are in a different upper echelon. If you like try to remove them from the evaluation.
And I think even pre-pandemic, we weren't even sure if Steven Stamkos was a Hall of Famer, at least in my head when I thought about it, right? Like
he didn't have the cups,
missed out on the international success. Mm-hmm. His career was fading. Was he ever going to get to 500 goals? And then all of a sudden, Tampa carries him to his first Stanley Cup. He wasn't around. They repeat with him being a superstar, rock star in the conversation for the Conn Smythe. He didn't win it. They go back another year after that. And he was kind of fringe Hart Trophy, at least for me last year. He didn't end up being on the ballot, but he probably finished top 10, should have been top 10 at the very least. Like, he's had a little career renaissance here at the end of what was kind of a tenuous moment in his career where they approached him maybe about waiving his no trade clause. Like, there was a lot that went into his career. A lot of
chapters.
He was
11th in Hart Trophy voting.
11th in Hart Trophy voting. I think he should have been probably a little bit higher. But
it was close.
It was like, what's going to become of Steven Stamkos' career? And then this rush of success after he, I guess, said no. Didn't want to get traded. Didn't want to get dealt. Didn't want to move on. Wanted to hang on. And that decision has not backfired in the slightest. Mm-hmm. He's helped lead Tampa into this like run of real success. And in turn, he's been able to extract a lot of individual success out of it. Now we're talking about his career being, you know, no one else is actively measuring up to his other than Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin. And maybe even Alex Ovechkin would like to have Steven Stamkos' career.
He's going to be the greatest. I don't think so.
He's going to be maybe not Ovi, but others would rather have Stamkos. Which career would you rather have, Stamkos or Ovechkin?
It depends on if you think I'm a self.
I know what type of hockey player you are.
Selfish is the wrong word. But
you're all about team.
If I'm really pushing individual agenda, then I think being the best goal scorer.
Well, no. What do you want? I'm asking you.
No, I would rather be Stamkos.
Because, so there is an argument there.
Yeah, and maybe it's because I want to, like.
You want to win?
Ovi won a cup.
You want to be considered a winner?
But
Ovi did win a cup. But what would you rather, I guess now, what would you rather be a part of? Tampa Bay, who's the boogeyman in the playoffs and are going to be a threat to the Maple Leafs, we expect. And all that success in the postseason, or a team that's just going for one individual record at the moment right now.
So I would rather be Steven Stamkos in the Tampa Bay Lightning.
So winning the Stanley Cup allowed for this.
But that's crazy.
Because
it's crazy to say.
If he was in this mode right now without winning a Stanley Cup, we'd be like, okay, like the career just didn't, it didn't pan out. Yeah, you're going to be the greatest goal scorer ever, but like there's a lot of yeah buts. But Stamkos, it's like, it, when you talk about like the ideal hockey player, ideal hockey situation, you know, he's lived
it. I'm kind of teetering now. I mean, Ovi has been to the Olympics. That's pretty cool.
And lost.
Yeah, but you still represented your country at the biggest stage in the world.
Mm-hmm. Whose fault is that? Not Steven Stamkos's.
No, I understand that. It's kind of crazy to say that I would rather not be on the verge of beating the all-time goal-scoring record in the world, but I don't know. Maybe you just have different perspectives of what a good career is or not. Like, they're both, it's like, yeah, I don't know. I'd rather have Sidney Crosby's career. Boom.
I guess what I'm saying is his legacy
in Canada. It's different because we're in a Canadian market. Stamkos is a Markham kid. Like, he's a nice guy. We know about him. He's a good leader. Like, maybe I'm just like a little bit soft spot for Stammer.
I think there's an argument that Steven Stamkos has the best, most appealing, second best.
Than
and second most appealing active career behind only Sidney Crosby.
So obviously it sucks that we haven't had NHLers in the Olympics. If the Olympics were to allow NHLers in 2026, would Stamkos be on that team?
2026?
That's the next one. The next Winter Olympics in 2026 in Milan. He wouldn't be on that roster.
I find it hard to believe he would.
So he's missed that boat.
Sidney Crosby probably will, but is that more of a legacy pick at that point?
I think it's a legacy pick.
I mean, he's still a dominant player. He's the second.
2023
right now,
he's
the second
line
center on this team right now.
It's still like 3 years away.
Yeah, I mean, the NHL's failure to create situations where best-on-best hockey has hurt Stamkos tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
The injury hurt him tremendously. The decision-making hurt him tremendously back in 2010. A lot of things have went against him internationally, but the things that were going against him at the club level, no longer.
Yeah.
His accomplishments with the Tampa Bay Lightning are pretty much unmatched. And last night, hitting 500 goals was a nice little cherry on top. But it continues. More room for cherries.
We got a nice clip of Stamkos talking post-game. Obviously, you know, even though he was in Vancouver, he got a great reaction from the crowd, which I always think, like, winning the Stanley Cup on non-home ice would really, like, be gut-wrenching. I'm always like, you know what? Let this team lose and get back home to win on home ice.
How about winning it in the bubble?
Okay. Well,
when you played one shift the entire playoffs.
That's the worst thing in the world. But you still win. But yeah. Stammer hitting 500 goals on the road. They still found a way to have a really nice reaction, and he praised the Vancouver crowd last night.
I've always said if you can't do it on home ice in front of your own fans, to be able to do it in a Canadian market is pretty special. I scored my 60th in Winnipeg and got a standing ovation from the crowd, and to get 500 here and pretty much the same ovation from the crowd, it means a lot. Those are the things that you remember. You remember the goal, but everyone always tells the story about how we were on the road and the fans gave an opposing player that type of respect, and I appreciate that very much, especially as a Canadian kid growing up loving this game. It's pretty special to do it here as well.
I forget that he scored 60 in 11-12 season, and he remembers that moment, and it's, you know, it happened in a Canadian market. That's nice. That's because he's a Canadian guy. We can love him, respect him.
Stamkos also very good on the mic.
He
knows how to answer that sort of question.
Articulate.
The legacy question, he can nail.
He's ready when that question pops up.
You asked, by the way, how many players have scored a hat trick when they hit 500?
Eight.
Or how many players have hit 500? I wanted to give you the further context.
Oh.
17% of players who have hit 500 had a hat trick when they hit that milestone. 17%. You said how many? That's a lot. That is a lot. 17%.
That seems like a really weird stat.
One of every five players that hits 500 and scores a hat trick.
We should know that for future Wake and Rake picks. When someone's on the verge of 500, they're getting a hat trick, okay? Remember that. Put that away in your brain. Put in the little storage section and remember that.
Evgeny Malkin's 40 away.
40? God.
Patrick Kane's
62 away. Are we going to be on the radio
away?
By 40?
Malkin could do that maybe next year. He'd probably have to heat up, though. I don't know how Geno's season's going.
Well,
we don't have many coming up. Even Patrice Bergeron, like, surefire Hall of Famer.
Yes.
416 goals.
Well, congrats to him. The Leafs matchup against the Lightning way late in the season on the 11th of April. One of the last, the second last game of the year. Wonder how many goals he'll be at then.
Sorry, the last game of the year is against
second
Tampa?
Second last game of the year.
I was going to say, you could just stay in Tampa or they can stay in Toronto.
They play Tampa on the Tuesday the 11th on a back-to-back against the Panthers, and then they finish their regular season against the New York Rangers one day later.
Mm.
It's weird that I know that.
Might be a load management game.
All right. Congrats to Stammer. Now you can just coast to the playoffs. All right. Speaking of the Maple Leafs in action tonight against the Winnipeg Jets, we'll talk to Josh Morrissey. No problem. But let's talk about this battle. I don't think it's right to say it's a rivalry, but I do think it's...
Oh, it's rivalry.
I don't know. Because of the bubble season, they played each other those 10 times. I don't know if there's a rivalry.
Well, I mean, it's taken a little bit out of it, but when it was
does every team have a rivalry?
When it was Matthews versus Line A and all that stuff, like, that was a thing for a bit.
It's not really.
And then it created a bit of a thing, and then you got Mark Scheifele saying, is there anything better than beating the Maple Leafs and, like, that stuff? I think there's a little extra juice.
Yeah, so okay, extra juice.
What's what's more juice? Which opponent gives more?
In
gives
Canada?
Off more juice? No, league-wide. Bruins.
Then those
Lightning.
Two? Yeah. Habs.
Oilers.
Habs.
Habs suck.
I know, but it's the storied rivalry. Like, are you talking about a current rivalry or a lifetime rivalry?
Juice in the moment. They come to town, more exciting.
I don't put the Jets that high. Maybe because the Jets are in a very similar space to the Leafs. I did some analysis last night. They're like the same team in the same spot right now.
And they're the other best team in Canada.
And they have quietly become... the 1A, 1B best team in Canada right now. I think maybe you're jaded by that.
No, I think I'm more jaded by the Line A Matthews thing.
Because it doesn't exist anymore.
I know, but it was a thing. And then fans, like, you kind of circle them in your head subconsciously. It's like the Jets. Oh, that's one of our rivals.
Okay.
I think it faded a little bit, but I think the North Division helped things, I guess. I mean, it helped things with every Canadian team. But I feel like it's, if not top five... comfortably top 10.
Okay,
rivalry
top 10.
For Toronto.
Top 10. There's how many teams in the league?
32.
Yeah.
So it's okay. It's top third.
They definitely have a bigger rivalry with them than Arizona, even though Arizona kicks their ass every night.
Yeah, you'd rather see the Jets than Arizona.
All right, anyway, whatever. If you think it's a rivalry or not, they're in town. Not a litmus test, I don't think.
Also, the games are pretty physical and nasty when they get together.
That's fun.
No, you're sleeping on this rivalry.
Okay,
it's top five.
Well, we're going to see it tonight.
It's number five.
All right, whatever. Couple storylines coming into it. Who starts tonight's game? Matt Murray got pulled.
Again.
Okay, yeah, here we go again. I'm ready to talk about this. Matt Murray got pulled on 8 shots. We know that. Sammy came in, had a great performance on 11 shots, basically playing 2 full periods. Who do you think should start tonight's game, Justin?
You answer the question because frankly, I don't care.
I don't. Well, this is sports radio. We have to talk about something.
Well, that's my take because I don't care. You tell me
Samsonov
why you care.
Samsonov should start tonight's game.
Okay. Why?
Because
he's better.
Because Matt Murray
he's more informed.
Matt Murray was given the opportunity to claim the net. Listen, like since the halfway part of the season, which was back 11 days ago, mm-hmm. right? January 8th. At that point, Murray and Samsonov had both played 16 games each. Okay, it was a dead even split. Since then, Murray has gone 4 out of 5 starts. 4 out of 5 starts. We never talked about that.
We only talked about that.
Okay.
I've been screaming for them to do exactly what they've done. And guess what? Matt Murray's failed.
Exactly. So how many more times are we just going to be like, give him another chance, give him another chance? The only
because
game that Samsonov started was on a back-to-back.
You brought him in because you thought he was going
to
be your playoff
hit miner. Maybe you're getting the information that you need now.
Maybe they have.
And Keith said...
You trust Mr. Nerves, Ilya Samsonov,
somebody
in
needs
a big
an
spot?
Like, you can't just keep putting Samsonov in the short end of the stick. The one game he's played in the last 5 was on the back-to-back and half a game where he was coming in relief. Keith said that, we wanted to get Murray more home starts. Well, 6 of the next 7 games are at home, so it's not like
he's going
to
get some.
He's going to get some. They have both had good starts, and now they've fallen off a bit. They've dropped from the top of the goalie rankings to midway or a lower echelon of the goaltending rankings. But I don't know, just like how much can we keep saying, let's give Murray another chance. Like, let's put Murray in, like, Murray. Like, Samsonov is somebody that can clearly come in and be a strong player. I just, like, I don't know why we're, like, pumping the Murray agenda so much. Like, Samsonov, you might need him to be the guy. Like, what if Murray's not? Just because you've invested in him longer and he's got the championship pedigree of two Stanley Cups. Like, God, he keeps getting put in the situation and failing.
My whole take on the goaltenders is that you need information. You need to discover who
these
guys are.
Have you not seen enough?
Not really.
Well, I'm not saying that now Samsonov should play every single game for the rest of the year.
Samsonov was brutal 2 weeks ago. Like, he was really dealing with it. He was going through it. Then he has one film session, and we're extolling
now he's
him and saying he's like the best. Yeah, he
came
in.
You know who needs a film session? Murray.
That's my whole point. Is they're both question marks.
Yeah.
So figure out exactly who they are. And I agree, that means playing both of them.
Yes.
But it means probably playing both of them in a starter's role, in a big spot role with pressure on. So
how do you
create that stuff?
In the biggest rivalry in Canada.
Exactly. It's a top five rivalry.
So why would you not put Samsonov in?
Do it. It's fine. Do it. But what my whole point is, we have to sort of simulate situations here. So maybe it's, again, it's such a crowded schedule that I don't know how you can really.
Okay, they play every other day basically
exactly.
for the next week.
So that means you have to use both of them. Mm-hmm. But how about this? There's 2 months?
Something like that. Yep.
Play one like a starter for a month, play the other like a starter for the month, or play one like a starter for 2 weeks off and on. Because you got to figure out if Murray can tackle a big workload, if Samsonov can string together good starts. You need to figure out who these goaltenders are. And I think that's the big problem with the Maple Leafs. I don't know if either of them can do the job. I don't know.
Oh, we should trade them both.
Because every time they're both given, maybe they should. Every time they're given an opportunity, it seems like they step on a rake. Murray has done that recently. Samsonov has just been sort of head case territory at times. He's been brilliant at times. But what is that going to give you if he's thrown in there in April in a tough spot?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the
you
question
can say
marks.
The same thing for Matt Murray.
Exactly. The question marks around both of them are only more in abundant now than they ever were. So it's all about getting the information. And if it's like quibbling, like, this is the best spot, this is optimal rest here for Matt Murray in this spot, so we're going to go with him then. That doesn't give you anything because you're putting him in an optimal situation.
Okay.
I want suboptimal situations for both these guys. I want to figure out who these guys are. And right now I feel like I know less about them than I did 3 months ago.
And so what was your answer?
I don't care as long as it gives me some sort of information.
Well, one of them has to go in.
So, Matt, go ahead, Ilya Samsonov.
Okay,
sure.
Good. We're in agreement. I better say
that. I didn't want to talk about the goalies, and now I'm fired up about it.
Well,
goalies.
Too bad. All right, then, second question then. Who cares who plays tonight? I do. Is are the Leafs a better team than the Winnipeg Jets? Are they the best team in Canada right now? Let me just give me 1 second for context, just to give you some background.
Lay it on me.
In the last 10 games, because I think that that's a good amount of sample size. Like, you can look at the entire season, but we're asking, are they the best team right now in Canada? Jets are 8-2-0 in the last 10 games. Leafs are 5-4-1.
Okay, so Jets are the hottest team in Canada.
And they both sit second in their divisions. Jets have 59 points. Leafs have 61 points.
Mm-hmm.
They're very different divisions, whatever. Jets are kind of tied, though, with the Stars. They both have 59 points.
The Jets have a very realistic chance at winning their division. The Leafs pretty much can't.
The Jets have a 49% chance to come first in their division. The Leafs have...
And that's a division with Colorado, mind you.
Exactly. The Leafs have, I believe it was like a 4-something percent chance.
If that,
to win their division. So they have different things right now to play for. The Jets have significant reason to really push these next 2 months because they could win their division. The Leafs literally have no chance. So they're in a little bit different boat. But the Leafs are fifth in goal differential and the Jets are 10th. Like, that's kind of the biggest difference between them. I went through, like, you know, goals, expected goals, you know, whatever, all those things. And Leafs leading in goal differential is big. And in points percentage, they're very small margin. Leafs are fourth in points percentage. Jets are sixth. They're very similar teams, but they have been led by their goaltending. Hellebuck's played 34 games, and he is in the top five goaltenders right now in the league. And we just talked about Matt Murray and Samsonov, who have been splitting the net and have been middle, top 15, top 10 at times, and that's where they are right now. There was a stretch where Samsonov had the best numbers in the league. He was, like, leading in goals against average, save percentage, but smaller sample size. Hellebuyck has been lights out this year for that team and has certainly allowed for them to be in the spot they're at. So there's just, like, a different makeup of why one team is better or one team is hotter than the other.
I will remove all that context and just say the Leafs are the better team. However, who's got a better chance of parlaying this season into a winning one, going deep in the playoffs? I think you'd have to circle Winnipeg. Like, if you had to, if you had to pick one of the two,
an easier path, maybe
who's going to be the last Canadian team standing?
It could be them. It should.
I mean, the Jets. I mean, Minnesota, Dallas. If Colorado gets on that side of the bracket as a wild card team, if they bust into the top three, whatever. Like, it's really, really difficult. Mm-hmm. But it's not Tampa and Boston. It will never be Tampa and Boston, what Winnipeg has to deal with. And I guess if you're talking about what's more sustainable, what works, what translates from the regular season to the postseason, I mean, Rick Bonus, he's translated from the regular season to the postseason pretty decently and in recent history. But more so than that, hey, Norris caliber defensemen, they are important to the playoffs. Vezina Trophy caliber goaltenders, they're important to the playoffs. Yeah. That's what Winnipeg has. The Maple Leafs have other things. I would say right now, if they played each other in a best of seven series, the Maple Leafs would win it. And if you remove the context of historical disappointment, like if it was just like spreadsheet, these two teams play, Maple Leafs would win. However, I think the Jets have a better chance to go on a really meaningful run just because the path is easier and they have the sort of touchstones that normally help you in postseason hockey. Where do you stand on it?
Exactly in alignment with that. The Leafs are the better team right now and it might be by a hair. Like, but we also watch a lot of Maple Leafs hockey and they have a harder division, a tougher schedule, and their pathway to success is a lot more tumultuous than the Winnipeg Jets. But if you put the Leafs in any other division, they're like in the Stanley Cup Finals.
If they weren't tormented. You know what I mean? Like, I still
think that's an intangible thing. Oh, 100%.
I still think it means
something. You can't evaluate that. Like,
Dallas not going to be an easy team. If the Maple Leafs got them in the first round, I would favor them, I suppose. But it's not a walkover.
Your ghosts and your demons are something that is very hard to put statistics to other than they can't make it past the first round. But the Winnipeg Jets, like, Kyle Connor comes into tonight's game with the exact same amount of points as Mitch Marner. Pierre-Luc Dubois has 49 points. William Nylander has 50. Auston Matthews has 49 points. Josh Morrissey has 49 points. They're top three, very similar
and
statistically
Nick
than
Ehlers,
their top three.
Nick Ehlers has missed some time, and that's why like the Leafs have had, I don't know, have they had an easier go of it? I mean, Matthews may have been maybe hurt the entire year, so I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but they've dealt with things, and they've overcome those things. And Rick Bonus has done it. Like, this team has, we asked Josh Morrissey about this, like they were losing ground every year, year after year after year, worse in the Central Division since making the Western Conference Final, I think it was in 2018. Like, they've been taking steps back, and then all of a sudden, new guy, same team shows up, and they've reached or have met their sort of potential that was, we always thought was there for them. Like, they've been a real trendy pick for a long time. Oh, Jets are going to turn around this year. Jets are good. Look at that roster. And they've always disappointed. But with the new coach and Paul Maurice saying, hey, maybe I'm not best for this job. Maybe you're right. Because Rick Bonus has come in and has done brilliant work and really gotten the best out of that team. And he's had that postseason success before. His formula works. That's why the Jets are dangerous.
Okay. But the question was, who's the best team in the...
The best team in Canada is the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Remove any other context, it's the Maple Leafs.
That was the question. I mean, you zoom out and there's like the pathway to success down the road and who's had the better chance at winning the cup and the better season. But even in the 10-game sample size that we're going to use as a fake indicator of success, it is at least by a margin. That's why tonight, sorry, about a thin margin. That's why tonight is, it's a big character test for your Maple Leafs. The last two games have been, they've been put outside their comfort zone, I'll say. The Boston Bruins game was the first of few that meant something, and they lost, but they fought hard. There was a lot of mistakes to why the Maple Leafs lost that game, and they kind of beat themselves in the end. Then they play the Florida Panthers in the most unhinged hockey game of all time, where they have to come outside their comfort zone and be gritty and be fierce and be physical and rally back and their goaltender gets pulled and the refs are abysmal and there's all this stuff going on and they find a way to win in overtime on a comeback game. Those last two games have been pretty good representations of having to fight and show some character. Tonight is no different. You said the Jets are a tough team to play against. They're physical. They're obviously quite skilled and they're red hot right now. So
structured and organized and all
they're
that
playing
stuff.
For something. And that's sometimes a really tough thing. The Leafs are, they're playing for playing.
They're playing for playing.
Well, like they are basically in the same spot they're going to be in. You know?
Yeah. I mean, we got, what, 30? And that'll help the Jets for sure. They're in a race.
Yeah, they got to win every game.
They are tooth and nail every night. And the Maple Leafs for the next 35 games, 37 games, I believe, left on the schedule, it's going to be about finding what motivates you. There's only so many more Boston games on the schedule. I think just one.
And
there's only so many more Tampa games. It may be just one.
It is one.
They don't have that much to grab. And I think it's late in the year, too, the second last game you said. Was that at the top or was that off air?
Did you black out?
No, I knew what you were talking about. I thought it might have been before we were on air.
Yeah, I just said that.
Oh,
the
no,
Leafs play the Bruins twice left. Two more times.
Two more times left? Okay.
They play Tampa the second last game of the year.
I did black out a bit.
Yeah, I think you did.
I was looking at the schedules or the records.
You're looking at yourself to make sure you looked good for our guests.
Jason Priestley, yeah. I will say, that, and that's what I was looking at. No fake points. Mm-hmm. One overtime loss. One loser point for the Jets.
That's
a good
team. Tells
you a little bit about their record.
All right, well, that's tonight. Looking forward to it. It's like it's a character game tonight for the Maple Leafs and for the Jets. And there's nothing better than beating the Jets. I mean, the Leafs, as someone has famously said.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so maybe you got some picks from tonight's game. It'll certainly be one that we'll be tuning into. Leafs at home against the Jets at 7 p.m. You got Raptors and Timberwolves at 8. We're going to talk a little bit about the divisional round NFL power ranking. So we did this last week. I believe it was Thursday as well, maybe Friday. We talked about, all right, our viewing schedule. What are we most excited to tune into? We basically had the same list of games in order that we just couldn't wait to flick on the TV.
Yeah.
There's four games, obviously, the Saturday, Sunday, Bengals, Bills, Jags, Chiefs, Cowboys, Niners, Giants, Eagles, maybe in that order, but I think that there is one for me that just has to be number one.
I think there's one for everybody.
If you don't have Bengals-Bills as the top of your power ranking this weekend, are you good? Because there is no bigger game, really, that I have circled on my calendar than this one. Take aside the emotions coming into this game. I have seen rumblings that DeMar Hamlin could be leading that team out on the field. Mm-hmm. That alone is going to be a scene that the entire sporting world will be tuned into. He's at least been at the training facility almost every day this week. But whether that's a decision that they make or not, that's humongous. This game was obviously canceled for really severe situations. Both teams are now back at it, ready to have this game that never happened. You got the battle of two of the biggest quarterback names in the NFL. And this is one that honestly feels like it could go either way. It's got
you say that, but the line continues to move in Buffalo's favor. I'm shocked.
I think it's going to be such a tight game.
You can get 5.5, even 6 points on the Bengals right now, which I think is wild because I think my biggest question heading into this game, and it's the number one game, there's no question about it, is Josh Allen and whether or not he can clean up the mistakes. He's got 5 picks in his last 3 games. He's had 13 fumbles this season, lost 5.
It feels like it's all been in the last 3 weeks too. Tough time to have that.
Yeah. Like the mistakes seem to be mounting here and it looks like that pressure is on him and on, and everything's squarely on his shoulders. And the Bengals don't have that issue. Are opportunistic, are really believe in themselves and what they have, and Joe Burrow is maybe the most confident individual walking the face of the earth.
Other than Aaron Rodgers that said he's ready to win another MVP yesterday.
But I think Burrow believes it more than Aaron.
Aaron Rodgers
I mean?
Is just spitting
like,
stupid
Aaron Rodgers just likes hearing himself talk.
Yeah.
Joe Burrow walks it, talks it, is it.
He does what he says.
He does what he says. So I'm fascinated by this game. I cannot wait for it. It is clearly number one. Your number two is which?
Jags Chiefs.
I'm a little surprised by that.
Okay. Arrested MVP Mahomes and a squad. Has been one of the most efficient, the most efficient offense in football this year. Last time these two played, it was Patrick Mahomes coming out, lighting up the Jags, 4 passing touchdowns, 331 yards. They started with this 20-0 lead. Then the Jags did what the Jags did last week and had a good pushback. I think Trevor Lawrence came back with 2 touchdown passes, whatever. Like, the game script was good to watch. And the Jags are riding momentum that you cannot replicate. They just had the 3rd best NFL comeback in playoff history. That is something that maybe it's the athlete in me that you are, there is a momentum. I don't know. We talked about, is there momentum in baseball? We just talked about this all the time this summer. I don't know. You play 1 game a week. This is the NFL playoffs. I really think that they're coming in with a pep in their step because they just did something that barely happens ever.
Yeah, I can't see it the same way. I mean, I just, the Chiefs aren't the Chargers. The Chiefs are the Chiefs.
Yeah, but I still want to watch the Chiefs.
And the Chiefs, I guess the important context.
I want to watch the Chiefs. Both teams are playing.
I feel like this could be, I mean, it could be, you know, watching the Chiefs do work is always fun. But the Chiefs, and historically, like, they just gave away. Last time we saw them in the playoffs, they gave away a second half, like, blew a first half lead, epic proportions. I guess that game script is right there available for you because Trevor Lawrence is all that in the second half and just did it. But I did look at the splits, and Trevor Lawrence actually isn't very different from the first half to the second half.
It just seems that way.
Like, blown up in my mind, or at least we built it up that, yeah, this guy sucks early on in games. needs to see the defense 5 times before he can even, you know, complete a pass. But that's not really the case. He's been good at all times throughout games. And not that that really matters, but maybe it matters if you're betting the first half like I did. I got Kansas City, and I'm like, do I want to get out of that? Anyway, I just think Kansas City's the better team. And they have to actively give it away if they're going to give it away. And Patrick Mahomes hasn't been giving away anything. He's not Josh Allen right now. He's performing at a very, very efficient level. And I expect Kansas City to take care of it. And that's why it slips for me. It's probably, it might be number 4 for me, to be honest.
Okay.
My number 2 is Dallas and San Francisco. I'm assuming that's your number 3.
That's correct.
It's number 2 because I kind of think it's not the NFC Championship game, but it might be. I kind of think these are the 2 best teams in the NFC right now.
Well, the Niners, definitely.
The Niners, definitely. And I do think Dallas is better than Philly. I don't know if it's a recency bias thing. It's Jalen Hurts being hurt. Maybe the questions around Jalen Hurts. I just think Dallas, when they're on, they can beat anyone. And they better be on if they're going to beat the San Francisco 49ers, who I think are the best team in the NFC. And it's, can Dak do it against stiffer competition? He was brilliant against Tampa Bay, but it's Tampa Bay. 75% completion rate, 4 touchdowns, 0 picks. It wasn't a perfect quarterback rating, but why wasn't it? Like, he was awesome. He was perfect. He was great. And I just want to see if he can do it against the 49ers. How real are the 49ers? How real is Brock Purdy? Are they, like, peaking at the precise right moment with guys like Deebo Samuel just showing up in the playoffs and being like, oh, yeah, that was why we were calling him the best player in football a couple years ago? I'm very, very excited about the 49ers and Cowboys.
So that one is a close 3rd for me. I do think that Dallas is in their groove right now. They're rolling. That Monday night game.
Also historical franchises too.
Yes.
Like big teams.
Their first playoff road win in 30 years, and now they're on the road again. A shot at redemption over a devastating playoff loss. This is something that a team can elevate their level for, and you said it. Like, they dominated against the Bucs, but it's the Bucs. I am really intrigued, obviously, with Brock Purdy. We've been just giving him opportunities to prove us wrong, and he has yet to do that. They've got a really great supporting cast and crew. Their offense running like a machine. Like, I do feel like this is one that could go either way as well.
It's the smallest spread game on the board.
It was close for me.
Okay.
So then I'm going to end with Giants-Eagles, which is the lowest in terms of my interest level. I mean, I'm interested in every single game, but if I had to rank them, the Eagles are a much better team in every facet, but the biggest question is what's up with Jalen Hurts. I mean, I'm all over the Giants bandwagon. I've loved watching Daniel Jones. This team is like fun and plucky. I don't think they have lots to prove, not too much to lose at this point. Like, you're going against the Eagles, like, they've been this team that's been like otherworldly this year, but the Giants have an opportunity to kind of prove who they are. Barkley looked elite. So did Daniel Jones. It's kind of one of those games where like anything is possible. We just saw the anything is possible a few times this weekend, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see something outrageous in this game, but the Eagles are a better team. They have the rest advantage. It's a little bit lower in my books for those reasons, but I like the chaotic opportunity in this game.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think anything is possible. I think chaos is possible, but I think the outcome is either way uninteresting.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think the Eagles could crush them, and it's like, okay, let's do something else on Saturday night.
Yeah.
But even if the Giants win, like, how? At what point do you stop cheering for Cinderella?
Like, never.
At what point does it make it less interesting?
Never.
I think this is where you should. Because if the Giants move on and they go to the NFC Championship game, they are going to get absolutely stomped, and that's not going to be exciting. Like, the 49ers are going to absolutely roll through them if they get there, and it's not going to be fun.
What if it's the Cowboys?
I think a healthy Jalen Hurts sets up a more entertaining and intriguing NFC Championship
sure.
game. And I think
you're looking
ahead.
I think
if the Giants get there, it'd be like, okay, now we ran out of gas, and Danny Dimes and NFC, like, just doesn't appeal to me.
Danny Dimes,
so I'm kind of... Maybe they could have a chance against the Cowboys. Maybe. But it's just, I'm now in the, okay, let's see
you're
the best.
You're looking
of,
big picture,
let's
yeah.
Let's see the best of the best here.
And you want to see a good Super Bowl.
And if the Giants win because Jalen Hurts is hurt, like, this game is going to suck, and then the NFC Championship game is going to suck, and that, I just don't want that to happen.
I see so that. That's good look ahead perspective.
Thank you.
So your ranking was?
My ranking would be Cincinnati at Buffalo, number one, Dallas, San Francisco, number two, Jacksonville, Kansas City, three, and Giants, Philly.
Okay, so we just have our two and three swapped.
Yep.
All right, well, can't wait to fit it all in this weekend. Kicks off 4:30 on Saturday. Got the Jags at the Chiefs, followed by the Giants at the Eagles at 8:15, and the Celtics at Toronto, and the Leafs in Montreal. All in a 4-hour span. Good luck.
Another busy, busy weekend.
Sunday, you got Bengals at the Bills at 3, and then Cowboys at the Niners at 6:30 with another day-ish earlier game, at least for the Knicks and Toronto, on Sunday at 6 p.m. So
we shouldn't
just fit everything in there.
We shouldn't complain, though, because we're almost at the point where we're going to be kind of scrounging for important stuff. Like, let's say the Raptors tear down, play a lot of meaningless games.
That'll be good chaos, though.
It will be good in the moment, but then it'll be like, okay, how are we going to break down 25 games? And then there'll be no NFL, and the Leafs might be playing meaningless games. Like, it's going to be tough, so let's enjoy the busy, busy weekends and all the content that will come from it.
It's going to be a fun one. We'll keep teeing that up. Obviously, we got Jason Priestley and co. at 7:30, and then we got Mike Mayock, who's calling the Bills-Bengals game for Westwood One with Ross Tucker.
That's a
big one right there. Those
it's
two
a fan
guys.
Morning show broadcasting.
It sure is. But on the other side of the break, we've got the A-list. That's next on the Fan Morning Show.
Sportsnet 590, the Fan. Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong,
bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, two things to get to in today's A-list. We have a trending topic this morning. If you go to Twitter, you look at what's happening. Hashtag Fartgate is trending in Canada. I looked at that. I thought, what the hell's going on this morning? Last night, while you might have been sleeping on the West Coast, the Canucks were playing in their nice skate gate shirts, their jerseys.
Skate gate?
They were doing hashtag skate gate or free the skate as well because they want to wear those jerseys. Okay. Not part of fart gate though.
Unrelated gate.
Our very own broadcasters on Sportsnet were broadcasting the game, doing a wonderful job as well. John Garrett and John Shorthouse, John Squared.
Mm-hmm. The Johns.
Going about their day, broadcasting the game, and then this happened.
And he backhands it down the ice. Is that you?
No. No, it wasn't.
One more time, Josh. I need everyone to listen to that noise, and we're going to debate.
Backhands it down the ice.
Oh,
honestly.
Hashtag Fartgate is now trending.
There's not much that can make me smile at 4:20 in the morning. But I watched this like it's the first thing I saw.
It was
and
the
I
first
was
thing I saw
howling.
Too.
I thought it was hilarious. Like it's the perfect.
It's got to be a fart.
Perfect comedic timing from both of them to ignore. Like I feel like the
they just let it marinate Canucks, for a second.
The Canucks have to be. have to be in the position they're in for it to be funny too.
Yeah.
Like they're kind of like not mailing it in, but it's like this is kind of unimportant with the Vancouver Canucks being what they are. They needed that comic relief in that booth. And those two delivered. Very funny. What was that? Like,
if it's not a little toot, I don't know what it is. Like, it's like, not a chair creaking. Like, that sounds like.
But the room isn't like mic'd up like a movie studio. Like, it's like. It's not like someone was in the back trying to make it quiet and it resulted that way.
Squeaked out. Sorry. Text them 590-590 on your thoughts on the trending topic of the morning.
Only in Vancouver.
Fartgate. All right, last one here. The Lakers, this was an investigative journalism, which is something rare in our lifetimes. Twitter account at Stathole Sports has been tracking every single graphic that the Lakers have posted after a loss. And they've had a couple losses this year. And last night was another one to my Beam team. The Lakers have had 25 losses this year. In 25 losses, they have never once put LeBron James on the graphic of the loss. 25 losses. Never once have they put him in the photo of the team's loss. They've put Westbrook in 7 of them.
Ooh.
And then you go.
Six man.
You go through the list and AD, Beverly, Walker, Ryan, everybody in a team huddle minus LeBron James in a team huddle. Where there's no LeBron James has been on 6 graphics. I don't know. There's something fishy going on there. They don't want to associate LeBron James with losing. They won't even put him in the graphic. Now this has been an investigative piece of our society. Thanks to Stathole Sports, who is staying on the grind and finding some interesting.
Yeah.
What does LeBron do the social media?
Is it in his contract?
It might be in his contract.
I wouldn't be surprised. I can't associate myself with losing, although that's all that they've done for the last couple years and since the bubble championship, the fake championship.
What a weird thing also to like notice. Oh, that's weird. They've lost 25 games and has LeBron James.
You can't get anything past Twitter.
And this, he's been tracking this. You can like scroll up all the way from the beginning. In October 21, he started this.
They probably do it on purpose now.
I mean, at this point, they are aware of what's going on.
It was always on purpose because LeBron James made
it. It's in his contract. Yeah. Corey in the PEF, before we take a break, says 100% it's an air horn trumpet you blow into. Corey, come on. Live for something, Corey.
Do you think, quickly, do you think LeBron plays for another team? Like, is there another chapter in the career?
Yes.
Like, I know the Bronny thing, but like.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yep.
Okay.
And speaking of that, in the wake and rake, I'm going to present to you the new betting odds for where Rodgers and Brady go. They've been released. Stay tuned for that because, I don't know, something futures Cuth might be interested in. We're going to take a break. On the other side, we spoke to Josh Morrissey ahead of tonight's matchup against the Winnipeg Jets. And then in studio, movie stars. That's next on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.